From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
In a week where the Australian politicians are all sworn in, they sit down and start again fighting on our behalf for another couple of years. Mm-hmm. In a week where Donald Trump goes to Mexico and has a chat face to face with the president and he wants him to pay for the wall. In a week where Anthony Weiner's missus finally cuts him off, gives him the snip and gets rid of him.
Ooh.
And in a week...
Don't say snip and Weiner.
...where the world became a little less happy with the death of Gene Wilder. There is still some more news that is bigger and more important than that on this week's episode of The Dice Men Cometh, which is episode 132 on the 1st of September. And that is, at 11 p.m. last night, after weeks of debate, after weeks of consternation, and after weeks of begging and pleading with his wife, one Dice Man Trent has finally backed Invisible Sun by Monty Cook.
It was always going to happen, let's face it.
Exactly. So welcome to The Dice Men Cometh on the 1st of September, episode 132. I'm Garth.
I'm Mark.
I'm Trent.
And what have we got on this week, Mark?
Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about those games we've been playing lately, including, but not just, Marco Polo. Not a pool game. We are going to draw our competition.
Whee!
And of course, we've got news that doesn't just include which Kickstarters Trent has backed, but all the news that's fit to be spoken about.
Yeah.
And did I mention we're going to draw our competition?
Hey!
All of those things and more coming up tonight on The Dice Men Cometh. Oh my God, Trent.
I could stand to talk about Invisible Sun quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
And in that spirit, this is the song Invisible Sun from The Police. Edge Radio 99.3 FM and The Police, Invisible Sun, a song we've played entirely by coincidence. It's nothing to do with the RPG Kickstarter sensation that is taken the world by storm. And look, can I tell you, I've been so absolutely obsessed with this new RPG from Monty Cook Games. For 3 days I was fretting on the next Keyfall in the Kickstarter, because it's a Kickstarter.
Keyfall?
It's a Kickstarter that's been run unlike any other Kickstarter that I've seen. In that, okay, normally we're used to people backing Kickstarters and getting certain bonuses,
yes,
but at certain points in the campaign, extra bonuses have become available.
You were here last week, Mark, when we heard all this before, weren't you?
No, I remember I wasn't here.
I finally pulled the trigger and I've actually decided to back it. Yes, my wife gave me permission, and now I have to just wait until. So I've started making a playlist of some of my favourite songs that are sort of Invisible Sun, and I'm not kidding.
Come on, it's great that you've backed it, because we'll get to play it. It looks amazing, but more importantly, you get to talk about this possibly in 2017 at the very end, or more than likely in 2018. How about you start us off with what you've been playing this week?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We've been playing The Voyages of Marco Polo.
Polo.
Marco.
Many people accuse the Dice Men of not covering enough Euros. I say that not enough Euros are interesting enough. For example, Garth, what's that Euro that you're currently interested in?
Well, Marco Polo, actually.
Fields of
Green, about farming.
That's the one with the tractor on the cover.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So, when Voyages of Marco Polo was released, I was keen. Mm. Marco Polo being, of course, the first European to exploit Asia for profit.
And it has the favourite box art of yours, the person looking out into the distance for no apparent
That's
reason.
That's right. And, of course, you know, you might have been following the completely historically accurate Netflix TV series. And now it's a game, albeit with less boobs. So this comes from Danielle Tassini and Simone Luciani. I think that's a man's name.
I think you were right. The team behind Zulkin, aren't they?
That's right, yep.
Yeah.
A game you hated, Garth.
I hated when I played it the first and second time, but I must say, having played it so much now on Board Game Arena, I think I'm finally figuring it out.
Same
with you, Mark.
Yeah, I'm played it a lot on Board Game Arena, and I still haven't figured it out. I think I finished last in every game.
No, so, you finished third that time in the three-player game.
Yeah.
So, of course, that was the game with the teeth and the gears and the cogs that you actually turned on the board. This is a far, far simpler affair. It's a pretty straightforward dice as worker placement game where players are amassing a victory point salad. I mean, that's pretty much it. It's got very simple rules and that then gleefully breaks them. It's a race across Asia, but travel is probably the single most difficult thing there is to do. It offers plenty of choices, but many of the best options are always going to be just one coin out of reach.
Or one camel.
It's simple to teach, but it plays fast and it's satisfyingly deep.
Mm.
I think it's no secret already that we enjoyed this.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And what I really like about it is that the setup is very, very clearly explained. We've played a couple of games now with the basic setup and the advanced setup, which adds a lot of difference, which I really, really liked. And the fact that you were able to teach it in two consecutive weeks to two players who'd never done it before, and we were still able to get the whole game done and dusted in, what, 2.5-3 hours, including that teaching time, was really, really good.
Well, the fact that we played the same game in two consecutive weeks as well.
It's a rarity, but something I really, really liked.
But for a lesser game, we wouldn't have bothered.
No.
I think it's fair to say. So this one combines resource management, and we're talking gold, pepper, and silk in this, not wood, stone, and, I don't know, food. And you need those resources to fulfill a series of contracts, and you're delivering those goods in return for more resources, for more points and other bonuses, with traveling across Asia, often using the perpetually scarce camels as a kind of currency. So it's just like international travel in the 1200s, moving across Asia in this game, just like that. It's slow, it's expensive, and there's no in-flight movie.
No.
Players get 5 dice each. They take turns placing them 1, 2, 3, or 4 at a time on various spots around the board to get benefits. You might want to get some more contracts to earn more points. You might spend dice to give you more money. But most likely, you're going to be going to the Grand Bazaar.
Yes.
To get some resources. Mm. And this is where it gets really, really clever. And this is as technical and as gritty as I'm going to get in this sort of description. So often in worker placement games, when a player blocks out a spot, well, it's just that, it's blocked.
Yes.
Like it's taken for that particular round. If they put their little meeple or dice there, if you're in first, that's it. And there are spots like that in Marco Polo, but they're color-coded. There are these blue spots, which are basically open right throughout the turn because the next player can always get in there. I mean, they've got to pay an extra cost to do that, but essentially, you've always got a range of options.
Yes.
Yeah, and what I immediately like about this is how you have to pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, sorry if I'm interrupting what you're going to get to next, Trent, but I really like that, yes, you're able to bump that last die off and take the turn yourself, but you then also have to pay 1 coin per pip on the dice you are playing.
That's right.
And as a rough rule, the more pips on the dice, the better your reward's going to be it in camels or pepper or silk or whatever the case may be. But you've also got to come up with money, and money can be a very scarce commodity as well as camels.
And you often need sets of dice to actually activate some of these actions. You might need a pair, you might need 3. So for example, if I have 3 sixes and I have to pay 6 coins to use an occupied slot because that's the lowest value of the dice I'm using, and I then get to do the actions up to the level of 6. But if I have 2 sixes and a 3, I only pay 3 coins because that's the lowest value of my 3 dice. But I only get to do the action up to the value of 3. I hope that makes sense.
I think so. And it's a really nice mix, particularly around the dice, because often in a dice game, you're thinking, I need to roll high to be able to do more stuff. But in this case, often you want a mixture of high and low, or even all low.
Well, it caught us a few times because I think we're used to paying the cost of the dice that's occupying the spot to kick it out. But no, it's the cost of the dice you're playing.
Yes.
Which I guess makes it a little bit easier. It just offers more choice.
Yeah, and you know, there is that other mechanic of if you roll, is it less than 15?
Yeah.
When you roll your 5 dice, then you get compensation in either money or camels at the start. So rolling low is not bad. You're then also going to pay less when you use those dice to knock other dice out because they're low numbers.
You need a mix of high.
So, yes, it's a dice game, but it's not... It's very difficult to get dice hosed in this game because you can always use your dice for something.
And I guess this is getting into why travelling in this game is just so, so difficult for a game that's ostensibly a race across Asia, right? Travelling is a bitch in Marco Polo. It requires two dice to travel, but you're only ever going to move according to the lowest die that you have. There's a monetary cost associated with travel when you place your dice on that spot. And it's steep.
Yes.
Plus, very steep. Certain routes on the board require payment in camels or coins as well. And this seemed to be what most of us were swearing about through the game.
Yeah, look, the movement side of things for a race game is very, very, very tricky. And it's almost a good strategy to always try and be the first player to move, purely so that you don't have to pay the cost to bump some other dice off. And also to maximise the number of pips on the dice that you can put on there. Because this game rewards a lot of movement early on in the turn order because you're going to be visiting small towns and larger cities in plopping down your trading posts throughout, which add a huge amount of benefit over the length of the game because this game only goes for 5 turns. So you want to get out, especially into things like the small towns, because every trading post you've got there will then activate a start of turn free bit of money or camels or a free action or a free die or something along the way, which you will get great benefit out of.
And then you've got the large towns where by going there, you then have a different action that you can do that only people who actually visit there can do. So it gives you access to actions that no one else can do, more variety, more ways to use your dice, more ability to get different stuff.
And you might only get those 5 actions if you're playing your dice one at a time.
Yeah.
Usually you're going to be using at least 2 or 3, maybe in one go. Maybe your first one to get the big guns out early in the turn. So it does play quite quickly, and then you're sort of frittering away the last couple. Just while we're on the subject of travel, there's basically 3 routes across the board, and not a lot of interaction, not a lot of connections between them, which makes it really hard to fulfill the goal cards that you get given in this game, which are usually, well, all of them is to basically visit 2 cities on the board
that aren't connected in any way.
None of which are connected in any way, so it's always going to be difficult.
Well, it's not just visit. You've got to plonk down a trading post, which means you have to end movement there.
Right.
Now, movement in itself, you want to be racing along, but the only time you'll ever get a chance to place that very, very important trading post is if you stop moving at a spot. So there's also a lot of calculation you need to have to decide how many die do I want to spend travelling. How many movement do I need to get to the big city or the small trading post? The small village for my trading post. Plus, you've got to think of your end of game goals. There's so much going on.
And it is worth visiting the cities first, as you say, for those special powers. And it's particularly worth getting to Beijing first, the ultimate destination. Although not necessarily, it doesn't trigger the end of the game if you get there first. But if you're the first one to plonk down your trading post in Beijing, you'll get some bonus points. Next player in gets slightly less bonus points and so on and so forth. If you get to Beijing first, it probably means you haven't fulfilled your goals yet or fulfilled a lot of the contracts that you'll supposedly be picking up on the way through. So it's all about that balance. If only we knew who'd won that game and we could ask them about striking that balance and how that works.
Oh, man, it was all one-way traffic last time we played this. Now, I think before we get to the extent of the walloping that happened to some of us, I think we should talk about the game breakers game.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to raise.
Haven't even mentioned the utterly game-breaking characters that you play. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I think that, if you look at this game without that, it's an interesting game. There's stuff you can do. It's trading. Yeah,
That was one.
I've got one.
Trading. It's resource management. It's worker placement. There's enough going on. But throw into the mix these individual characters that every one of them breaks one of the fundamental rules of the game in a massive way.
And you look at it and you go, that can't possibly be right. You can't possibly have play-tested that. That's insane.
Well, I think Leon said it best when we were teaching him the game last week, and we got to one of the characters' game-breaking ability when we were showing him. This is, you know, Trent had finished his expert game explanation and we're going into how this is going to break it all now. And we went to the first one, which is, this character just doesn't roll the dice. He just chooses whatever number he wants, yeah. And that's how he goes. And Leon's just mind explosion.
And this character starts in Beijing at the end of the board and travels backwards.
And immediately gets the 10-point bonus that you would get for being in Beijing, because you also place your first trading post there.
And you're just like, whoop! And mind explosion.
You know how we said you've got to pay to push these other people out? Well, one guy doesn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to pay at all for anything.
And for me, my most recent character was that I could just teleport myself from any one of the oasis, which are kind of a transit point between two cities or villages, to any other one.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, you know that thing about travel being difficult?
Yep. Don't worry about it. Not a problem. Yeah. And somehow it all works.
Yeah. I think that is such an incredibly brave decision in game design to say, I've built this wonderful game, and now I'm going to absolutely break the crap out of it in all these different ways.
I'm going to give all the characters superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the joy of it is that they all break the game at a certain level of, I guess, evenness.
And there seemed to be a lot of unrest, I think, when this game first came out, about, well, eventually, gamers being gamers will work out that character is just a little bit too game-breaky, you know, and that's the character that I'm always going to play.
Geez.
But now this game has been out for, is it maybe 18 months or so?
Yeah.
That hasn't happened, which shows
how
well-designed it is.
How big a grognard would you have to be, though, seriously, to work that out? I mean,
and then I've noticed,
I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but God.
Who wants to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, where's the fun in that? But I think, I'm not sure whether it has come out or it's about to come out, that there's an expansion that adds more characters with more game-breaking abilities. Is that, you've got the machine open there, Garth. Has that one come out yet?
Let
it
might me
have been at Essen,
that.
Or maybe it's Essen this year.
All right, so a set of new characters that came out last year.
Yeah.
All right. So Voyages of Marco Polo, I think it's a universal thumbs up from us.
Yes.
I can't, the only criticism I can level at it is that there's not a lot of player interaction.
Well, the player
interaction.
But it
interaction is a Euro after all.
Yeah, but I mean, there is quite a lot in the pushing out mechanic and the way that manifests itself.
But it doesn't really affect each other.
I was about to say, where it manifests itself most is in the travel.
Yes.
Because the first player token will go to the last player who travelled. And
that can
be a very important thing.
And as you say, travelling first is an advantage.
Indeed. So I think that does lend itself quite well to having that, I guess, player interaction and risk-reward of, do I want to hold back and travel at the end, hoping that I'll also get first player, or do I just want to get in early so I don't have to spend as many monies?
I would say this game is so simple to teach that it's almost a gateway game.
Oh, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think
no.
It's quite there.
Especially with the character unique abilities, I think that in itself takes it from gateway to a more experienced one.
But there's even a tutorial setting in the instructions that tells you what characters to play and what abilities to put on the cities and stuff. I don't think it's that hard to teach.
Well, yeah, I don't think you want to play with people that haven't played this style of game before. But as a, you know, maybe you've played your Ticket to Ride, or you've played your King of Tokyo, or even maybe like if you played something simple like a Stone Age, this could absolutely be the next step.
Voyages of Marco Polo. We love it.
We do.
Get on it.
Hey, if you want to get Voyages of Marco Polo, if you like the sound of that, well, you might be able to do that with your vouchers.
Oh, yeah, baby.
From Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Should we draw the winner of our competition next?
Yeah, let's think about it.
No, let's do it next.
Okay.
Well, let's argue about it while I play this song.
Sure.
All right. Coming up on the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The strange sounds of Ermine Coat and Uneasy Riders, which brings us to this point in the show. This show being The Dice Men Cometh, board games and card games, every Thursday night on Edge Radio 99.3.
That song did make me a bit uneasy, actually.
FM. We're going to do board game news in a little while, but I've been talking quite a bit, so we should do something else.
How about this for an idea? How about I give away one of our two vouchers?
Yes!
And what better way to give it away? Give it away, give it away, give it away now.
Oh, you are so hip with the kids.
I've got a table, and I've got 2D10s.
I thought that was the sound of your hip replacement. All right. So
I'm going to roll for it, baby.
We've been calling for entries from our listeners for the Code Games competition. We have drawn up a list of names from the tens of thousands of listeners who have both emailed us with the three Code Games, what we named.
Absolutely.
In those three episodes. And people who have also been kind enough to write us lovely reviews on iTunes, and we do appreciate everybody and their involvement. We really do.
We sure do. And look, I will tell you, because of this thing called probability, there are actually some numbers that don't have anyone allocated to them. Not many. But if one of those numbers comes up, I'll have to re-roll. It probably won't happen.
So hang on. Potentially,
statistically speaking,
potentially we could be sitting here all night while you roll blank numbers.
If I keep rolling 99 over and over and over again.
Well, this is like the burst mechanic all over again. I don't want to have any
burst gate. It's a burst gate.
You haven't thought this through. All right.
For anyone who doesn't know what burst gate is, you must watch our playthrough video of the others. Part one up, part two coming soon. But trust me, it's worth it just to find out what burst gate is. Here I go. And the winner is, oh my God, Solomon Green.
There we go. Congrats,
he
Sol.
He might have to slow down the episode.
Solomon,
for those people who haven't met,
he's a notable character.
He
likes
to listen to our podcast at 1.5 speed because he reckons we talk too slow down here in Tasmania.
Well, I just want to say congratulations. Thanks so much for the entry he put in a couple of days ago. And well done for winning. A $50 voucher is heading your way.
Courtesy of Polymorph Games and Hobbies. And that's 50 bucks you can spend on anything.
Yes.
And they'll post it to you anywhere.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
And not only are they currently offering, I think, a flat 10% discount on their website, but for everyone who's entered, they're going to be getting an email with a little secret Dice Man code, which takes that discount and makes it even bigger.
Awesome.
So that's pretty spectacular.
So we'll draw another one later on in the show.
Board game news coming up next on the Dice Man Cometh.
Couple of tracks going back to back on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh, Mark Trenton, Garth. Last up there was Meredith with Cleanse My Soul, and before that, The Terrible Truths with Lift Weights. Now, Trent, you're going to lift some weights off our shoulders by telling us all about what is happening in the world of gaming. I can't do it.
I love it when you pretend to be a teacher. Okay, everybody, all together now. 3, 2, 1. Board gaming news. You've all seen that Scythe is getting an expansion.
Yeah.
Everyone's
who would have thought,
no,
eh?
I know. Coming this summer before the hype dies down and everyone forgets about this travesty of a game. It's called Invaders from Afar. It'll add two new factions to the game, an extra player, some new abilities. So basically more of what's made it successful.
Good. You are talking about the number 18 game of all time. Number 10 in the strategy rank.
Maybe I should play this again.
Yes.
And reconsider my opinion.
Yes.
All right. In a move that will surprise absolutely no one, there is a massive slew of Pokemon-related products about to hit the shelves just in time for Christmas.
Poke-a-who?
And why not? A marketing survey has shown that 38% of Pokemon Go players are likely to purchase Pokemon-themed products, even if they say it's for their kids.
Really?
Garth.
I think I look good in the undies.
That would also explain... Oh, my God. Did you have to... That would also explain why there's a live-action Pokemon movie in the cards. And speaking of movies based on games, yes, we're going there again. Many older geeks have a soft spot for the 1985 box office flop Clue,
Yeah, including Leon.
Yeah,
spoke
yeah.
very highly of it.
Of course, Cluedo, as the game yes. is known in Australia. It's the film that offered three different endings. Oh, my God. That was a big deal back in the 80s, all right? Well, it's being remade.
Hey. Yay.
By Hasbro and 20th Century Fox. Now, if this works, you can expect a cinematic Hasbro-verse.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. No.
Everyone's doing it, right? You got the Star Wars universe, you got the Marvel universe, you got the DCEU.
Lego.
Universal Monster verse. Why not the Hasbro verse? Transformers versus G.I. Joe with battleships.
And you've also got Monopoly. Isn't Monopoly being made as well?
Yeah. And then everybody tries to work out the murder weapon at the end.
Sounds
box
perfect.
Office gold, yeah. I tell you, gold. All right, the interweb is a bit excited about Matago's upcoming Innes board game, the Celtic-themed successor to Cyclades.
Yeah.
That's how I pronounce it anyway. Some people say Cyclades.
Cyclades.
And Kemet. Although, strictly speaking, this is not a trilogy. They're not even the same designers or anything.
No, but they're the same publisher.
Same publisher.
That counts.
And they have...
The Ancient World in common-ish
it's
thing? With miniatures
and creatures.
Area
control,
and...
men on a board yeah. stuff in yeah. various historical motifs. Many pre-orders are now being placed for Innes, and more specifically for overpriced shipping.
Yeah.
And/or games that won't arrive here in Australia until well into 2017. No prizes for guessing what I'll be calling Innes if it's crap.
Guinness?
Moving on. In another general sign of growth in the board gaming hobby, German manufacturer Ludofact has purchased a factory in Lafayette, Indiana.
Wow.
Right. So this adds to their other factories, one in Germany, one in the Czech Republic, and they've got an office in Hong Kong. So this is a German manufacturer of board games that is diversifying into the United States.
Wowzers.
Right.
That's weird.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going into the US, not Mexico, not Canada, right, into the middle of the States. And they've openly said that the reason they're doing it is that they're going for the Kickstarter market.
Yeah, because there's a lot of Kickstarters where they're saying, it's going to be locally produced.
Yep.
Well, it'll also won't cost them much in shipping.
Yeah.
Well, what that means is that somebody's going to have to be doing the sums to compete against Chinese manufacturing and Chinese labor plus shipping.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be work out to be at least parallel or... I don't know, offer some extra service or something. The fact that someone's in your backyard, you might be more inclined to go to them just for convenience.
Quite possibly.
No language barrier, maybe.
I'm sure someone's been sitting there with a calculator going, pressing buttons and figuring it out.
How are you going to do all of this once President Trump kicks out all the cheap Mexican labor from the US? I don't know.
Well, he was talking to the Mexican president last night, so maybe that's what they were talking about.
What an awkward photo opportunity that was. Okay, who else is doing well in America? Loot Crate. Do you guys know Loot Crate?
I've so wanted to subscribe to this, but I can't justify the randomality,
yeah,
is that a word?
Right, so it's a monthly subscription service for a random box of pop culture tripe.
Mm.
Or awesome, depending on your point of view.
And depending on the month that you get.
And it's themed differently by each month, isn't it?
It's games, it's toys, it's T-shirts. There's usually some kind of theme.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just get... it is available in Australia.
Yeah.
You can get like a Star Wars box.
Yeah. Firefly.
Every month. Okay. For the Star Wars. The basic entry level in Australia is $30 a month.
Yeah.
For this box of just this curated stuff. I mean, it might be a key ring and a mug from The Walking Dead 1 month or something.
Yeah.
But so $30 is the cheapest level. For the Star Wars one every month, I think it's $130. Yeah, and you probably get a figurine for that. Yeah, I mean, all sorts of other crap. There's a few board gamey bits in there. Anyway, Loot Crate is currently the fastest growing company in the US.
Wow.
Of anyone.
Wow.
This is not just the toys and games sector.
Far out.
Yeah, so in the last year, their business has expanded by more than 66%. 1,000%.
Jeez.
Sorry, I take that back. That's over the past 3 years. I apologise.
Oh, well, that's totally different then.
Yeah. In that case, let's move along, please.
Revenues of $116 million. This is a service that's available in the States. Check it out if you want to get involved. But, yeah, it's potluck.
Hey, and talking of big numbers, I'm going to interrupt you here, Trent, because you talk way too much, let's just face it. Couple of Kickstarters
that
I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. I just wanted to remind people with an Australian link.
Oh, are you going to talk about Unfair?
So Unfair, we mentioned, you know, I think the last time we mentioned it had just kicked over its funding level around the 50,000 mark. Still, it's only a bit over halfway through the campaign now. They're already up to 135,000, so it's like almost three times funded and just over halfway through the campaign. So that's fantastic news for Good Games Publishing and for another great Australian game. And the other one I wanted to mention, this one's finished, the Poly Hero Dice, the Wizard set. It's finished up now. I cannot believe this. I mean, it's a great product, but
this is a set of dice produced by an Australian.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, wizard themed.
That would would you say wizard themed? They're just they're just kind of stupid shapes. And
yeah, yeah, they're wizard
shaped
shapes.
Like a fireball or a vial or a potion. Scroll or a
that so helps my pretending to be a wizard.
$575,000
for dice.
Yep. And given, were you saying, Garth, how much did a set of dice cost?
Well, it's $15, so you get a set of seven, so it's basically $2 per
die. We are talking hundreds of thousands of dice wizarding their way around the world.
And if I haven't mentioned, speaking of Kickstarters, the Invisible Sun RPG, that is still available. Get on board that. Hey, you know what else people really love? Serial killers. And that explains why Jack the Ripper just never goes out of style and why Fantasy Flight Games is expanding Letter from Whitechapel, that deduction game with a new expansion. Yes! After Letter from Whitechapel came out, the expansion's called Dear Boss, from the letters that were allegedly written by Jack the Ripper to the police at the time. At that time. It includes decks of cards to change the game up and miniatures to replace the frankly nondescript pawns that you got with that game. I'm quite fond of that game. Doesn't get a lot of table time these days because I think it does need another wrinkle in it to just
Look, let's face it. People are always looking for pawn replacement.
And speaking of Jack the Ripper, Sherlock Holmes will soon be able to hunt the man in a mature-themed expansion for the consulting detective game, Jack the Ripper and West End Adventures, which brings us to the end of the board gaming news.
There you go.
We have one more winner in our Polymorph Games and Hobbies contest. And
we're going to do that when we come back.
We'll do that when we come back. And also, incidentally, we should say thanks to Neil for sending us a bunch of these groovy mugs.
Coffee cups. Especially for us.
But that doesn't mean that we're just victims of graft and corruption.
Never.
Or that we're exploiting.
Hardly ever.
I mean, I drink.
Not often.
I drink quite a bit of coffee anyway.
Yeah.
It's always handy to have another vessel to do that in. Thank you, Neil. Okay.
We'll give away that voucher after the break.
Oh, that was the very, very sleepy and relaxing Underflow by Emma Louise. Now we should change the pace because we have to draw or roll the second winner of our Polymorph Games and Hobbies Code Games competition. Take it away, Mr. Mark.
Let me just change the pace by snorting some coffee straight out of this mug. All right. Thank you again to everybody who entered, and also to everybody who helped us out on iTunes. It really does give us a bit of a boost.
And our second winner is...
What did you roll?
51.
I rolled the name of Tim Morton. Woo! Tim Morton, you're our second winner. A $50 Polymorph Games and Hobbies voucher will be coming your way, as well as Solomon Green. The two of you receiving a $50 Polymorph Games and Hobbies voucher. And as Garth pointed out earlier, I will be emailing, I think it'll be me, emailing all our other entrants with the special code that will give you an additional percentage on top of the already discounted 10% stock that Polymorph Games and Hobbies have. That is awesome. Thank you so much to Neil. We really appreciate his support of us.
Exactly right. And just checking out the Polymorph Games and Hobbies website. That 10% off all of their products runs for the whole month of August. Free shipping on September.
It's September. That.
You guys are so slick. So slick.
But there is also free shipping for an order over $130. So you may as well just buy a couple of games and not have to pay any of that disastrous shipping.
Hey, this brings us to more or less the end of the show. And so we normally have a sort of post-show game night.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about playing Imperial Settlers again. Are we playing Imperial Settlers tonight?
No, because you couldn't come out and play with us when myself, Mark, and Carl broke out Imperial
Settlers.
Well,
hey, it's not
too long
my
ago.
Fault that I have a life, all right?
But you choose to have one.
I'm exercising. I'm trying to keep the weight down and get a bit stronger and, you know, do things other than board games.
Yeah, and look,
we talked about this. I don't want to just be a brain in a jar, man.
I don't think we should talk about that.
I was going to say, you have reduced the non-head fat by quite a substantial proportion.
That's more the hipster haircut. But anyway, we did try, for the very first time, the Why Can't We Be Friends first deck expansion into Imperial Settlers by a good friend of the show, Ignace Trevicek.
Is that the expansion I bought you for your birthday?
No, you bought me the Atlanteans expansion.
So you haven't opened that yet?
I did open it, but I haven't played it. But I will.
Way to feel appreciated.
Well, because, Trent, we wanted to get the first expansion out first, and then you know what? When we're going to play the second expansion? Second.
Exactly. So what the Why Can't We Be Friends expansion adds is it adds a couple of common cards, it adds some extra cards for each of the races, it adds a couple of cards for the solo game, because apparently this is a very, very good solo game. But what I really like about it are new production-style cards, which are open production. Now, what they do, like a lot of the normal production cards in Imperial Settlers, is that the person who places them in their own individual civilization, in their own individual tableau, will get bonuses. But other players can send one of their workers over to your tableau and take the resources because it's accessible by anybody. Now,
it doesn't sound like a lot, does it?
But geez, it adds a lot, because in the first game we played, one of your open production buildings, Mark, happened to be for swords.
God damn
it. Which allowed us to be raising each other's buildings a lot more and throwing down so many foundations. It was fantastic.
And this is the third game of this I've played. And in the first two without the expansion, raising, to be fair, played a very, very minor part in the game.
Yeah, we've never really done it much.
You've got to get two swords to be able to raise someone else's building, which, unless, is it the Romans, I think, that can store swords? Apart from them, it's really difficult to get two swords. But in this, we were sometimes getting four swords in a turn. And it made, like, particularly me, because I seem to be the target guard of your raising, it made me change my whole strategy.
Oh, so Why Can't We Be Friends is irony.
Yeah. Exactly. So look, that for me, that is the single biggest reason to get this expansion. It's only, again, a small deck of cards and a great that it fits all in the same box that Imperial Settlers comes into. So I think, well, now that the cards are shuffled in there, they're staying in there.
Yeah, look, I think so. And there is one weird one, the Volcano, that's like this instant that lets you basically almost use this card like a raise, and you can get rid of a building that you can't otherwise raise. I just wonder why they didn't put more of that style of card in there, and I'm interested to see what's in. There's another card expansion, isn't there?
There's a whole other expansion he hasn't played yet.
No, not that one. That adds an extra civilization, the Atlanteans. But then there's also another card expansion, isn't there?
Yeah, Garth, there's another one called Three is the Magic Number. Right. And what that does is it makes it a bit more relevant, because each of the cards have a little colour on them, and that sort of offers you a few little benefits along the way, but this makes that a bit more prominent, I guess.
I think this game could benefit from something like an event deck. I don't know if you guys have played Small World, where you have, at the start of each round, you have an event, and it's like an event that affects everyone on the board, and just changes something up a little bit for that round. Something like that could, Ignace, if you're listening, you can have that one for free.
Did I hear you say that the Why Can't We Be Friends expansion adds a solo play mode?
No, it just adds a few more cards, because this game comes with solo mode from the base game, and
I do wonder,
is really good.
I do wonder if that's the case, Mark.
Never played it solo, Trent.
You haven't?
No.
Well, I just figured. I mean. Well, clearly you've got time to. I mean, you're not exercising, so. Oh, that was
anyway,
cheap.
That was below the belt. If you could see it.
Look, seeing as we aren't going to be playing Imperial Settlers,
I know.
for this evening, we have got something else lined up, haven't we, Mark?
I have lined up good friend of the show, Carl, to come along and teach us, in particular you, Trent.
What?
Agricola, because I cannot believe you haven't played this modern classic.
No, it's true. Never played it.
I've played it a few times.
It's farming, right?
Yeah.
How exciting can it be?
It's like the start of the farming craze.
Hey, I've just had a brainwave.
Oh.
What if we ran like a segment on the show where we ask listeners to vote on what game we should play?
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to do...
Can we at least put out a sort of a short list?
Mate. Or we see how cruel they get.
Or, I guess if we have our collections up to date on Board Game Geek, they'd at least know what to choose from.
All right, well, let's workshop. Let's workshop.
Yeah,
that.
Look, just briefly before we finish, we are potentially looking at a bit of a momentous occasion, because it did happen very briefly, I think today or yesterday, in that Twilight Struggle temporarily went from number two on the list to number three on the list.
Oh.
Because through the ages, a new story of civilization is only 1/100th away from Twilight Struggle.
Really?
So Twilight Struggle in the geek rating on BGG is 8.231, whereas Through the Ages, a New Story of Civilization, is 8.230. They have been fighting it out, and look, Twilight Struggle. It's just old now.
And Through the Ages, I'll wait for the app. And with that sterling gamer attitude, we come to the end of another show. The Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.